how do we really grow people? How do we make us the best culture it possibly can be? Whether that's through bringing people in that fit that culture, or once they're there, by really empowering them.
Hi, I'm Jack Altman, the CEO of Lattice. Welcome to Uniquely Led. Throughout my career, I've learned that running a business comes with great challenges and requires a dedication to the craft of leadership. I've also learned that no two companies operate the same way. Success isn't one size fits all. In fact, doing things your own way is often the greatest source of strength. In this series, I'm sitting down with industry leaders to learn about their unique approaches to management and how those distinctive styles translate into a strong company culture. Dylan Field is the CEO and co-founder of the collaborative design powerhouse Figma. Today, we deep dive into what really sets his company apart, the culture and community he has built over the past decade. Dylan began his company at the age of 20, but even as a young CEO, he recognized that building the right culture was just as important as building the right product. So Dylan, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you, man.
So the first question we like to ask, which I know you're not going to like, what would you say distinguishes you from other leaders?
I'd like to think that compared with a lot of other leaders, I'm pretty humble. I literally feel like I can learn from anyone that's at Figma. And so when you're surrounded by incredible folks, it's really easy to stay humble. That's not saying, by the way, when I say humble, I'm not saying like I'm putting myself down. I'm pretty confident in myself, but rather it's saying that I don't think I'm better than other people.
Do you care about this trait showing up throughout the culture? Like, because that's something about you, are you trying to also create a culture where that is sort of a value that everyone holds?
I think I'm pretty allergic to arrogance. I'm pretty allergic to people that are super high ego and it's all about them. My viewpoint is I'm working for Figma. You know, if you're on Figma's team, if you're my coworker, we're both working for Figma. We're both in pursuit of this vision. We're trying to make design accessible to everyone. And that's really important to us because design is, I think, going to be the skill of at least the next decade, if not the century. And I take a pretty wide view of what design can mean. It's not just interface design, which is like what we're known for, but design is also visual communication. It's building software. It's all creativity. And how do we make it so that as we're transitioning from like physical economy to digital economy, that everyone has access to that?
So I want to talk about how you've scaled yourself through all the growth, because you started the company pretty young. Like, can you talk about where you were at when you started the company and like what sort of leader you were then and maybe like a bit about how that's evolved to where you are now?
Yeah, so I started Figma in August 2012. So coming up on 9 years ago, which is insane.
Wow.
And at the time I was 20, you know, I just come off of an internship at Flipboard. I've been there twice. First time as more of an engineer. Second time I got on the design team, I was really excited about that. I didn't know why they'd have me. I didn't have a lot of design background, but they were super awesome and was pretty unimpressed with the tools at the time. So started to get really excited with my co-founder about kind of looking at all sorts of different creative tools and figuring out what we could build with WebGL and bring to the browser and make more collaborative. And it took a while to figure out exactly what we're doing. But once we did, we kind of doubled down, kept building, kept scaling it, and kept raising money. And very quickly, I had to learn how to manage people. That was hard. I knew nothing about management. I knew something about leadership. I definitely didn't know that management and leadership were like different things. Mm-hmm. And then I think it got really tough as we were kind of nearing that 10 to 12 person mark, and I no longer could have everyone report to me. And was already struggling. And there's other stuff going on in my life at that time too. That was really, really tough. Mm-hmm. And we brought on another manager. His name is Sho, and he was our first director of engineering. Still the company is a director of product today. And he was someone that I learned a lot from in terms of how he empowered teams, how he really didn't micromanage and gave people that were creative room to grow and to lead and to work through stuff themselves while also kind of keeping things on the rails. And I was really impressed and learned a lot about what I wanted to do as a manager and leader by watching him.
Was it easy for you to see your gaps, or was part of the problem not understanding even what you didn't know? Like, did you have a clear understanding of what you wanted to accomplish and what you needed to change as a leader yourself?
I got there over time. I think it's interesting because a lot of times people ask for help for the first time when they're going through struggles. That was definitely the case for me. I remember the first time that I got like some coaching and I did an assessment and like, there was this histogram they gave you as part of this assessment, and like three bars showing your skills as a leader. And the average was like here. And usually you had like one bar, they said that it was like up here. Maybe you had a few bars that are a little bit below average. Mine were all like zero. Because the team was really unhappy. All of them were zero.
Oh, God.
And this is like right after I had a pretty intense moment with my team. And people were saying, hey, something's got to change. You got to really improve here. And so I went and found this coach. The coach was like, yeah, you're shit.
Wow.
and to be fair, they gave me a lot of good feedback too. But I think when things are like that, not just for a CEO, but for anyone in the org, you really had to figure out, okay, how do you rapidly change and shift? What's going to be really important? For me, that was like basic skills, you know, more effort on getting buy-in, making sure that we were having good cadence because we're still in stealth mode. We hadn't shipped anything after a few years. Let's have a good cadence to launch to make sure that people are really seeing that we're going to get this thing out there, empowering people more, not micromanaging, and making sure that we're improving the team and getting to the right culture because we didn't have a culture established yet. And those are some of the core things that were showing up that then impact everything else. But I think it's like, okay, are there anything mechanical that's missing? And then you kind of get to the higher level skills around like, you know, are you imbuing a sense of purpose for the team? You know, are you really helping people grow and develop? And all the fun stuff.
Do you find ways in which that experience of you going through that much growth helps you help others go through this kind of growth? Like when you're now helping somebody on your team scale or see where they need to grow, are you able to draw back on your own experience and make it relevant to them?
I try to. I mean, I think any time you can share a story or tell people about part of your life and show how it could apply, I think it can be really useful. You know, one thing that I heard as a piece of advice in college was when someone gives you advice, they're not giving advice to you. They're giving advice themselves in your shoes. And so I always try to like give people the framework of, well, here's how I process this. And here's like what the experiences I've had in the past. So they can better understand like how I react to something because that lens might be useful for them or might not.
That's
but
great advice.
That way I can try to like give more context and contextualize more.
Yeah. And I know, you know, 9 years, it definitely happened over a long period of time, but you're still sort of, by any measure, it's a very fast growing company. You know, you've been in fast growth for a while now. You're also somebody who cares a ton about culture. Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, those two things can sometimes feel at odds. Like, oh, should I grow super fast or should I keep a great culture? I guess I'm curious, how do you think about those two things? Are they at odds? And what are the ways that you balance those now while you are growing as quickly as you are?
I mean, you kind of want to cap your growth, right? Like, if you're raising, we're in a period of time, you know, in case people watch this interview in like 5 years and the economy's in total shit, you know, we're in a period of time in 2021 right now where valuations are a bit crazy. A lot of people are raising a lot of money.
People are hiring quickly.
People are hiring quickly. I think people are saying we're in the most competitive labor market since 2000.
It certainly feels that way.
Now we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at right this moment. And I think as we're there, you know, if you're raising like Lattice has recently, if you've raised a ton of money for your company, there's always temptation of like, okay, how fast can we grow this thing? Can we 5x in a year? And it's like, well, no, it's usually a bad idea. Some people can. We've always capped it pretty much at 2x per year.
On headcount.
On headcount growth. And sometimes we're a little bit above that, but like 2x is sort of the ceiling. And then we only do a little bit more than that if we have to.
Yeah.
I think as we get larger, we're going to probably bring that down a bit. I think that growing 2x when you're 360 people, or we'll probably end the year a little over 500 people. So I don't think we'll go to like 1,000 in 2022. I think we'll probably go significantly less than that. But we want to grow as fast as we can to make the most of this time in the market where we got a winning product while also not just breaking everything.
Right. And even growing 2x in a year at your scale is super fast.
Oh, yeah. No, it feels crazy at times.
Yeah. And I guess I'm curious. Hiring is sort of like the defining hallmark of that growth when like when you are doubling headcount, feels like everybody's recruiting all the time, everybody's trying to fill roles. How do you keep the bar high? How do you make sure that people are, you know, fitting what you're looking for when people are, I'm sure, overwhelmed with work, when people are super busy, when they just want to get the hire done and get on to the next one? How do you double headcount successfully in a year?
I've tried from the start to make a culture of hiring is like one of the most important things we can do. And also we should never rush it. Starts by example. So every search I do personally, I'm never rushing a search. And sometimes that can be very painful. I remember our head of recruiting, for example, It took 7, 8, 9 months. I forget exactly how long before we failed to fill that role. I would have loved to fill it in 2 to 3 months, and we needed to fill it in 2 to 3 months. And we, you know, we waited until we found the right person. Or actually, we had met the right person right at the start. It just took them 9 months to figure out that we were the right company.
Will you ever hire someone that you don't think is perfect for the role just to get it done?
I'm sure we have historically, but like I can't remember a recent time that we've done it. And so I try to imbue that in all the organization, but also I try to make sure that everyone knows how important it is that they really embody hiring and that they are responsible for building their team. Like it's not, if you're a head of engineering or some area of like Figma, like part of your job is to find the right people to build your team with. And yes, recruiting is there to help, but like it's on you. And it's not a valid excuse to be like, oh, I didn't get enough help from recruiting. In reality, recruiting at Figma is also amazing. That's why we waited so long to bring on Nadia. And it's been amazing to watch just like how we've grown that team. And I think recruiting, the right ethos for it is sort of, they're not only building the organization and trying to attract some of the greatest talent in the world to come work at the company. They're also trying to make sure that we have a really diverse team and that when we bring people in, that they are having a great sense of belonging in the company, they feel included, but also that they're kind of playing defense in a way. It's like, how can we make sure that we're getting people out of the process that are not the right fit for the culture, who are not the right fit for these roles? And when you find someone who's an amazing fit for the culture, but not the right fit for the role, how do we find another role one day for them to come into? And how to make sure we have build that relationship with them.
You said something there that I've heard from a bunch of what I think are great leaders, which is that you always expect the manager to be responsible for hiring. Mm-hmm. And that if recruiting supports them, that's great, but like that's not the expectation. Why is that important?
So you really want the manager to feel invested in whether that person is going to work out in the company. You want them to respect the process, respect the pipeline. And if they're not intimately involved and familiar with that and just getting, you know, recruiting, just serving them candidates, then it feels different, I think. But also, I think recruiting only has so much bandwidth. And so we have to make sure that if there's roles that we're trying to fill that recruiters have the bandwidth to help with, that, you know, they're getting some help, but mostly people are doing it on their own too.
Yeah. I'm curious a little bit about your culture, which from the outside looks similar to your product in certain ways. Like it looks like you've got a culture where you really value creativity, for example. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit curious, A, is it right that that's at the center of your culture? And B, like how do you do that? Because I think for so many software companies or startups in general, it feels like it's more professionalized and a little bit less raw and creative. And for whatever reason, I feel like Figma has captured some of that raw creativity. So I'd love to hear how that's happened.
I think there's all these great feedback loops that happen in the world. And one of them for us is like, we make this fun, creative tool. And then people that use that tool and really resonate with it, I think they get interested in joining Figma. And so that's one feedback loop, I think, that brings people that are creative into the company. Another one is, like one of our values is love your craft. And it also grows as you go. It's another value. And so we really try to reward people that are focused on the craftsmanship of it, that are trying to grow their craft and figure out new ways to grow their skills. And so I think that that's something that's rewarded. And then also it makes time and space for it. So for example, we have Maker Weeks, which are kind of like hack weeks, but for everyone. We do those twice a year. We bring lots of people in and just give people a space to flourish and to make anything they want to, as long as it helps Figma in some way. And I've been really impressed with what people have done during those weeks. And that's some of the most times that we've like had our sort of R&D funnel be just filled up with so many amazing efforts that, you know, maybe you don't see the light of day for years, but they're the initial seeds that will grow over time, as well as things that are just cultural. Like we had, at the start of COVID, we had a musical come out that was made in a week, completely, you know, written, produced, directed, performed by Figmates.
Wow.
In just a week.
Do you find that like there are things that are in tension with creativity, like a focus on metrics or when you're in hyperscale, like do those eat away at creativity or are you able to keep those both in the balance at the same time?
I think when you've got like a really defined roadmap over a long period of time, which is super tempting to do because like there's always all this stuff that you know you had to do, that can be intention sometimes because people don't have the room to like really be creative if they're like, okay, I have to fix these like 1,000 bugs in this order. That's not a very creative act. I do think that actually metrics, if you're measuring and saying, okay, your KR is to hit, you know, X 1,000 weekly active users for this thing, or, you know, Y percentage of people that use this product should use this feature, or whatever it is, that actually can be a pretty creative thing. Because then you're saying, here's the target, go hit it. You know, it's not prescribing how to hit it. But yeah, I think that some, you know, I'm not saying Figma is always like 1,000% creative. We have to get this stuff done. And so you don't want to just be divergent all the time. You have to converge too.
Is there anything besides creativity, humility that come to mind for you as like core to what Figma is all about?
Community is a big one. I think like, how do we grow and build a community where everyone can be together and learn from each other? I think ownership is a big one. That's something that we're always improving at, but like making it so people can just like really run with it and be able to execute on stuff. And I don't think we can scale appropriately if we don't have that. I think just fun. Like, if you're not having fun, why are you there? Why are we all working on this? And so the more that you can make it so that people feel permission to have fun, I think that's really important.
And I think your products also show that. Like FigJam is fun, for example, even the name. And I think that's like a really important, which I guess goes back to community too. Mm-hmm. On the community point, brings me to the next thing I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
Which is the world of work, hybrid, Figma's place in that, both as a company itself and then also as sort of like a tool for the world of remote work. And I want to start by noticing the fact that you are among or maybe even the first company that I saw to sort of name hybrid back in like August of last year, like way before it was cool to name it. And you named it pretty early and you wrote a blog post and, you know, you sort of shared like, this is how we're thinking about things.
Yep.
And I recall thinking, wow, what a bold early decision. And I was like, I wish I had known how to do that. I guess I'm curious, how did you come to that? Like, what was the source of figuring out I'm going to make this particular call and I'm going to do it before the masses go there?
People had so little clarity last year and there's so much anxiety over everything. And I was like, if we can just tell people one thing that could be a rock for them in terms of what it's going to be like to go back, I think that'd be really helpful. And so the way we went about it to figure it out was, let's survey people. And what I found out when I surveyed people was like, the results were everywhere. And some people were like, die hard, I want the office. If you take the office away from me, I'm out. Some people were, I'm never coming back to an office. I'm remote forever. I love my new...
If you force me to go back, I'm out.
Well, it just like, not even like a consideration. I'm in my beautiful rural space and like, can't wait for my Starlink. Like, it's going to be great. You know, and everything between. And the other thing that was interesting was teams counterintuitively like did not match what I thought they would be in terms of distribution of who wanted to be where. So like engineering was more in-person skewed. Sales was more remote skewed. Whereas I thought that'd be the opposite.
Same. We had that same...
Really?
The same realization, yeah.
That's so interesting. So anyway, so I was like, okay, we're going to need to do hybrid. Some people will end up wanting to be remote. Some people want to be in person. And if you're remote, we'll paylocalize you. Won't be anywhere in the world. We can only do it in some regions like North America, for example, due to tax and whatnot. And if you're going to be associated with a hub, great. Everyone associated with a hub should come in at least 2 days a week. Same 2 days for everyone to maximize serendipity, maximize cross-team connection. Want to come in 5 days a week to the hub, 7 days, whatever. We give it a key. You're welcome to come do that. But 2 days is what we expect. And we've rolled that out for New York and London. Those offices are open. SF will open soon. And so, yeah, excited to see how it works. I think hybrid will present a lot of challenges too. I think a lot of teams will not be up for that and they'll end up converging to remote or in person and not being in a between state. But to me, it's like, we want to scale to be thousands of people anyway. And, you know, we're a global business, like 81%, 81 of our weekly active users are outside the United States. And so it's like, we have to be global and how do we get there? Being hybrid is part of that.
We're also doing hybrid. And, you know, it strikes me that there's things that are great about remote. There are things that are great about in person. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm curious, how are you thinking about getting the best of both worlds instead of like the worst of both worlds?
Yeah, this is all hypothetical. So just be clear, because we're still figuring out. But I think having annual summits where people can all come together as a company will be important. Like when I was talking with people that had already done the hybrid thing before the pandemic even happened, they were saying, oh yeah, well, we operate a remote or a hybrid team, but like we would never operate this way. We always have people coming together. FaceTime is really important. So that's one note. I think another one is I like to keep things like all hands. We call it Fig Nation. We have a lot of fig puns.
That's
it's
fun.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
But I like to keep Fig Nation all remote. I think it's actually maybe more inclusive that way, more level as a playing field. Things like that are things we're experimenting with, and we'll see to figure it out.
What's your experience of what Figma, the product's role, has been in all of this? Like, obviously, it's like something that works remotely. Is it designed for, is it better in a remote world than in an office? Does it make no difference? Like, how do you think about Figma's role in the ecosystem of enabling remote work or hybrid?
It was a little weird because we designed Figma as like an all in-person company. And then we found that people that were all remote really, really liked Figma, as well as people that were in person. I mean, but remote was just off the charts. And I think over the pandemic, we saw people not only gravitate more towards Figma, but also we saw a lot more people just use Figma for 10 plus hours a day. They were in it like all the time.
That's a lot of hours.
Yeah. And as they were in it all this time, they were not just doing the core interface design work. They were doing all sorts of use cases. So like last year, we saw everything from people creating a virtual city. When the pandemic hit, people recreated San Francisco and Figma.
That was cool. Yeah.
It was pretty sweet. We saw people plan out gardens and home improvement projects. We saw Biden design, not him, but his team, design like the Biden plane in Figma. I mean, it was like everything in between.
Wow.
And so the use cases were really out there. But we also saw a lot of diagramming, whiteboarding, slide creation.
Did you come up with FigJam during the pandemic?
So we had always wanted to do diagramming and whiteboarding as a product. But the pandemic hit and we saw so many people start doing that use case in Figma that we thought, okay, we have to go build a product around this immediately. And so it took probably a good 6 months before we really realized that and had a full team staffed. And then from there is like just a kind of a race. How fast can we get this out? Because people needed it.
One last question sort of around this topic. You mentioned earlier, you know, that this is where you're heading for now, but you know, we don't know exactly what the future holds. You also talked about how this is like the most competitive job market of all time. What are the things that you've noticed now versus say 18 months ago before the pandemic where you think there's like a real lasting change in work, whether it's things like flexibility or maybe it's perks or maybe it's something completely different? Like what do you believe will be different now than was true in the past?
Well, I think flexibility stays. I just can't imagine. I think you're seeing some of the hardcore finance companies say everyone back at the office and we'll see if it works. Maybe it will for that industry. But for tech, I mean, we've undergone a change. There's no going back to everyone's in the office all the time. Like that's over.
Yeah.
And any company that tries to hang on to that, like will be told by the labor market, it's not going to work. And I think that maybe there's an exception for like R&D or places that are very specialized. I'm talking about companies like Lattice and Figma. Like our employees aren't going to stand for that. And so I think the other part that will be interesting is as people spread out more, what are the hubs that will emerge? There will be more hubs. Probably pay will equalize more across the world, not just the United States, over enough time. But I think that it's a good thing if there's more hubs outside of the Silicon Valley. And also, I think that the other thing we'll start to see is funding is clearly going to go outside of Silicon Valley. The infrastructure that it used to be that you know you had to be in like Palo Alto SF to get a round raise because, of course, people want to meet you in person. That's no longer the case. And so as startups and companies get founded all across the world, they exit eventually, people start angel investing the proceeds they made, then you have a really great ecosystem starting to form in all these different places. And it'll be interesting to see which ones have network effects. I don't know, but I'm really excited to see that.
So another thing I want to ask you about is something that I think is really important to people in Lattice's yep. community, which is about how people can go from getting started in HR or people ops all the way up through being like a chief people officer. And I guess the thing I'm particularly interested to hear about is what are you looking for from the head of people in your company? Like what's that relationship that you want to have, you know, between you and that leader?
As I think about what it means to be a great HR leader, I think it's, you have to go beyond compliance. You have to go beyond thinking about just how not to fuck up as a business and more into how do we really grow people? How do we make us the best culture it possibly can be? Whether that's through bringing people in that fit that culture, or once they're there, by really empowering them and giving them that track that they can go you know, self-actualize through and create a culture of growth. And I think that, and fun and play and like love in some ways. And I think that that's not every company that's gonna do that. But if you can find the right company, that's a good first step. Assuming that those values resonate with you. If they don't, then probably go somewhere else. But then I think it's about how do you get the technical skills you need, as well as making sure you have those soft skills to be able to really help a team evolve.
Okay, the last question I want to ask you about is around this idea that I think we've all observed that people's values have changed mm-hmm. over the course of the pandemic, because sort of everything was stripped away from us. And then we sort of built back up from nothing, you know, like we were all just at home, we had our work, we had our families, but like mm-hmm. we didn't have a whole lot else. And I guess I'm curious to hear from you what you've observed about how those values have changed and maybe like what that means.
I mean, it's beautifully said, first of all. I think a lot of people are just more in touch with themselves right now. They're more in touch with like where they want to go in life, what life means for them. And some people are going to go in radically different paths because of that. You know, we've seen people at Figma already transition from like hardcore engineering careers to careers that are nothing could be further away from engineering. And, you know, they have been very respectful about that, leaving Figma in a good timeline, stuff like that. But, you know, it's not always about, oh, I want to go from company A to company B. Sometimes it's like, I want to go from track A to like track Z in my life. And I think that the best thing we can do is support people through that. There's going to be a lot of instability for a bit as people figure this out and companies need to adapt. But there's a reason you bring people into your company and you want to care for them and show them your support.
I think it's really important what you just said about helping support people through that change and not trying to force people into the thing that you think is best for your mm-hmm. company, but actually taking a lens of, we're going to help people do what's best for them. And we have this like long-term belief that that's going to support the company.
And sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's like you can find ways to support somebody and also have it be great for the company too. But yeah, it just doesn't ever seem to work when you take somebody that's like trying to do X and make them do Y.
Totally. All right. Well, Dylan, this was such a great conversation.
Yeah,
so appreciate
you, man.
Of you taking the time.
Well, thank you for all of your amazing software that we use to run Figma.
Same to you. Thanks. Well, it was great to see you. Talk soon.
Okay.
That was Dylan Field, the CEO and co-founder of Figma. You can find more episodes of this podcast at lattice.com/uniquelyled, including interviews with CEOs from Vimeo, Benchling, Front, and more.